Good evening and welcome. It's KVC Arts. I'm David Fleming. Tonight we'll hear about the 25th annual Riverside Dickens Festival coming up February 24th and 25th. We'll also hear from Dana Zimbrick, artistic director and conductor for the California Chamber Orchestra. Their upcoming concert, Out of This World, is February 24th at the Old Town Temecula Community Theater, a concert celebrating space exploration and music taken into space to represent the sounds of the Earth. We're going to start with Emmanuel Rogers and one of the many comedians who are part of First Nations Comedy Experience. That's stand-up comedy most Sundays on the campus of San Bernardino Valley College. And it'll be a new series coming to FNX TV.
Joining us today is comedian Kevin Avery. Kevin is just one of the many great comedians appearing in the FNX Comedy Experience. Thank you, Kevin, for taking time out to speak with us today.
Of course, yeah. Thanks for having me.
Hey, you're welcome. Kevin, I'm going to start off asking you about you. How did you become one of those folks who wants to make people laugh on purpose?
You know, it's one of the things I always just wanted to do it, but I never thought I would. Yeah, I mean, I sort of fell in love with stand-up, with comedy in general, but really with stand-up when I was a very young kid. I watched it constantly, and I watched it wherever I could, and that just sort of stayed with me through my adult years. And at some point, I think after college, I was like, I can't not do this anymore. And so I kind of got pushed into it.
Okay. Well, growing up, who were some of the people that encouraged you to do comedy?
Nobody really did. I think it's common with most comedians that everyone tells you to stop and find something way more practical and normal to do. I mean, some friends, you know, they were like, yeah, do it. Why not? You know, I think they're more curious than anything else. But, I mean, right before I started, though, I would hang out in certain comedy clubs and just kind of watch. And so there were a few comedians that would sort of see me sitting in the back and like, I know what you're doing. You know, like there was a comedian, Will Walls, who was in San Francisco. And he was like, hey, man, you need to just get up there. So there were a few comedians who sort of pushed me to start doing it.
All right. Well, were there any of the comedians that you watched coming up who inspired you also?
Yeah, I mean, I used to watch this show called Evening at the Improv.
Ah.
So, I mean, there were a million comedians on that I watched. But then also the standard, you know, I picked up the prior records. I picked up old records that my parents had and listened to records, for one thing.
Right, yeah.
So that was already like, what is this? But, you know, prior Flip Wilson, even it's weird to say Cosby now, but Cosby was the guy who kind of really got it all started for me. So those were the big three back in the day that I kind of listened to repeatedly and studied.
Okay, now before we get too far out about your career and you, when are you appearing at the San Bernardino Valley College Campus Theater? What day, what time?
I'm so glad you asked that.
Oh, right.
I'll be there Sunday, February 25th. The show's at 7 p.m. It's really funny. It's going to be me and Gene Pompa, who's a longtime friend and very funny comedian, and Graham Elwood, and a bunch more. It should be a really fun show.
All right. I'm glad you know when you're going to be there. It helps out our audience a great deal. Do you
have... Well, it helps me out, too, because if I don't know when or where, then I can't do the show from home. You know?
Yeah. I'm going to ask you just a basic question here about the FNX Comedy Experience, and that is, how did you come to be a part of it?
Graham Elwood was the guy behind it, and he's a friend of mine. I've been on his podcast a number of times, Comedy Film Nerds. I'm a big movie person. He runs a podcast with Chris Mancini. And so Graham and I became friends through just the comedy scene and doing that podcast. We've done a couple shows together before, too. And so, yeah, he invited me to join and happy to do it.
Yeah, Graham has actually put together a great number of people who are pretty funny here. So yeah. I'm glad that you were able to join him on this.
Yeah, I'm excited to do it. It should be a super, super fun show. So
I think so. I had the opportunity to catch some of your work. And I was just wondering, how's the thug life working out for you?
The thug life is really the suburban life, and that is going just fine. Thug life, I don't really know anything about, but, you know, the burbs are all right out here eating these sliced tomatoes and chicken apple sausage for breakfast, so, you know, doing all right.
Yeah, I was thinking how many thugs were, well, would first off hear the program, and then how many would wonder, well, what am I missing in my diet?
Well, you know, I don't know. I mean, the program I think you're talking about when you bring up thugs. I don't know. Every thug needs to have a balanced breakfast. I can tell you that right now. That's no matter who you are, where you are, I think a good breakfast is all about that, man.
Okay. Well, you talk about thugs, and you are a man of color, and you cannot be confused with a thug.
You do have to say that over the phone sometimes, because that is a thing that people are like, wait, what now? Why is this guy talking about thuggery and thug life and thug shenanigans?
Yeah, I thought I would help the audience understand why we went here. But you talk about them, and you also tell us in some of your sets how you cannot be confused with them. And can you tell us why?
Well, it's not so much. I mean, you're referring to a short film I made called Thugs the Musical. And it came out of a stand-up bit that I did where I was talking about how, you know, because I'm an actor as well. And so I go on these auditions. And a lot of times when Hollywood is looking for a black guy, they're really looking for a black guy. They're looking for their idea. Of, you know, and I've been on an audition or two where they're like, we want like a thuggish type of person or a gangster rapper type of person.
Right.
And so my struggle as a black guy trying to be like, I didn't grow up in that environment. Obviously, I didn't, you know, I lived on a street called Olive Branch Lane, you know.
Oh, wow.
So like, yeah. And that was off of Lazy River Way. That was where I was rolling. So I just talked about the idea of trying to force something that you're not into an audition, and it doesn't work. It comes off really weird. And so Thugs the Musical is this film about this black actor who's been in Hollywood for like 8 years. And you know how black actors have always complained about always getting certain roles,
yes,
you know, always being boxed in a specific role. I'm the thug. I got to be the cop. I got to be the da-da-da-da. Well, this guy is mad that he's not getting those roles.
Wow.
And so he decides that he is going to put together this sort of showcase, this play, called Thugs the Musical, to show Hollywood and the world that he can, quote unquote, act black. And it goes disastrously wrong, of course, and it's ridiculous. And it's a lot of fun. David Alan Greer is in it. Margaret Cho is in it.
Oh, wow.
Prodigal Son from the Wu-Tang family is in it. All kinds of people. It's a lot of fun.
Well, now, how can our audience, if they wanted to see this, how could they get a copy?
I am not as glad that you asked that question. Right now, here's the thing. This is very complicated.
Okay.
The movie, you can find it on Distrify platform, but I got to be honest, I don't really know what that is. We're about to move it and put it somewhere else. So right now, I'm streaming it live some places, and so it's not as visible online right now. But hopefully, we're just going to throw it up on YouTube soon so people can just see it, because we shot it a while ago.
Okay, now when you say screen it live, is that going to be anywhere in the Inland Empire?
Perhaps in L.A. I don't know. I'm playing around with some things right now. Every once in a while, I do a thing called Thugs Almost Live, where me and some of the other comedians who are involved in the movie, we actually perform stand-up and then perform some of the songs that are in the film live, and then we screen the film. So when that happens, I will promote it heavily on Twitter and Instagram and Facebook and all the things. I've done it a few times. I've done it only once in L.A., and it's very fun. I've done it in New York, San Francisco, and so hopefully we will come back to Los Angeles again soon.
All right. Now, I don't want to forget this at all, because I saw some really good stuff when I went looking for information about you. Can you tell our listeners where they can go to find out more about you and the comedy that you do so well?
Sure. If you're on Twitter, I'm there at Kevin Avery. That's Kevin and A-V-E-R-Y. Okay. Instagram, it's Kevin Avery Comedy. And I have a website that we're redoing. It's kevinaverycomedy.com, but it's very old and out of date. So it's really Twitter and Instagram. If you want to find me, there I am, and I will announce all the things that I'm doing. Yeah.
All right, and you're also on YouTube, right?
Yes, Kevin Avery Comedy on YouTube. I put clips and short films up there now and then, and
Yeah, and I'd like to encourage our listeners, if you get the opportunity, go ahead and check some of this out. I saw some of your things on YouTube, and I didn't stop laughing after it was done.
Okay. Thank you very much.
So while we're speaking about your work, is there anything that you have coming up that you're working on besides the FNX comedy experience that you'd like our audience and your fans to know about?
I'm working on a secret project right now, so I can't say it, but I'm also writing on the Jim Jefferies show. I don't know why I said I'm working on a secret project if it's a secret.
Yeah,
told everybody there's a secret. I don't know why.
Well, now we're all going to try to see what it is.
That's right.
Yeah.
Now you're paying attention. But otherwise, I'm currently a writer on the Jim Jefferies show.
Okay.
So check that out. We come back March 27th, I believe, on Comedy Central. Yeah. Look out for that, man.
All right. I definitely will be. So, Kevin, This is something I like to ask our guests periodically, and you just happen to be the one that came up with this one. What does comedy do for you personally, and what do you hope your audience will take with them when they leave the show?
I don't know. That's an interesting question, because when you find out, I think, what it does for you, then you found out what the thing is that makes you funny, I guess, if we're getting in the philosophical side of stand-up. But for me, it's a chance to explain all of this. It's a little bit of a chance to say all the things to people that I would not normally say to, like, friends and family.
All right.
Be able to just tell people all kinds of stuff that I wouldn't normally speak of. All I want people to do is laugh and enjoy it and then want to come back for more, whether it's more comedy from me or more comedy that's just out there in the world.
All right. All right. Well, you know, we here at KVCR hope that one day you'll be able to get that thug role and pull it off.
Oh, yeah. We'll see.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe you can come down to San Bernardino and I can help you with some thug speak lessons. My parents made me throw most of that away coming up.
I feel like it might be the blind leading the blind. I'm just saying, buddy.
Yeah.
I don't know that you would. I will tell you this. I think, though, you could find Thugs the Musical. We did make a soundtrack. And it's called Thugs the Musical, the album. And you could find it on Spotify. And I think on iTunes. Yeah, I think it's there. I hope.
No, but, you know, I would fool you because I am perfectly bilingual. I can speak perfect street when I have to.
Well, sure. We all can kick into it.
Yeah.
That's the thing. The switch can be flipped.
Yeah.
But it has to be at the, you know, at the right moment.
Yeah, and I've tried to avoid those right moments for years now.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, it's like when Iron Man has to throw the armor on, you know, or Tony Stark has to be, here we go. You just do it.
Yeah.
It just happens.
Yeah, and then hope you don't get arrested.
Oh, that's true.
Well, I enjoyed speaking with you immensely, man. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you, man.
That was Emmanuel Rogers in conversation with Kevin Avery on the campus of San Bernardino Valley College February 25th as part of First Nations Comedy Experience. fnx.org/comedy for more. You're with 91.9 KVCR. As KVC Arts continues, we'll hear about the Riverside Dickens Festival coming up February 24th and 25th. Later, we'll hear about an upcoming performance of the California Chamber Orchestra. You're listening to KVC Arts on 91.9 KVCR. I'm David Fleming. Later in the program, we'll hear from Dana Zimbrick, Artistic Director and Conductor for the California Chamber Orchestra. First, though, it's the Riverside Dickens Festival coming up February 24th and 25th. We have with us now Linda Dilday, a part of the festival in one form or another for quite some time.
I've been a board member for 6 years, and before that, I was working at Barnes & Noble and helped sponsor the bookshop that's downtown at the festival. So I was a committee member in charge of running that bookshop. I want to say it's been an additional 6 or 7 years to what I've done with the board. So
gosh.
I've been involved for about 12 or 13 years.
Wow. And now, depending on how you read it, I suppose, this seems to be actually a literary festival emphasizing 19th century works of authors of England and America, with Charles Dickens being the central figure. Is that an accurate way of saying
this?
Okay.
Yes,
cool.
And over the years, we've added a number of guest authors. We do things with a gentleman who portrays our Edgar Allan Poe, and we do things in schools with both Mr. Poe and Mr. Dickens as an outreach, because there is required reading for both middle school and high school of both of those authors' works. This year's festival, we've got about 15 authors that will be at the festival in character, authors like Mark Twain and H.G. Wells, Jane Austen, Bronte sisters, Mary Shelley. So we have a number of people who study and master the character and then come as those authors. So
nice.
Contemporaries of Dickens.
Beautiful. Well, you were talking about educational outreach, so this seems to be a nice branch to talk about the featured book for this year's Riverside Dickens Festival, Great Expectations.
Yes.
Talk to us about how a book feature manifests itself through the festival and approaching the festival.
we have a lecture, Meet Mr. Dickens, and he will talk about Great Expectations. We also have a group that meets at one of the local libraries and does a book discussion the whole month of January in preparation for our festival. We try and think of a variety of ways that we can tie the theme in, and this year we've used, you know, come to the festival, we have great expectations, that kind of thing.
Nice, okay. Let's go into this way. Why? Why a Dickens festival as opposed to just simply the literary festival with this broad range of authors? Why did we settle on Charles Dickens?
Originally, way back in 1992, two members of Friends of the Library, downtown Riverside, got it in their heads that they wanted to come up with a festival that promoted literacy in Riverside. And they chose Dickens because they felt he was the most influential and famous writer of the 19th century. And he made a difference in not only changing society and making the world better in which to live, but the festival could then highlight the library and encourage reading, promote literacy, and also enjoy dramatic and cultural arts. Mm. And it's grown over the years because of having Mr. Dickens. Our gentleman is Paul Jacques, and he portrays Mr. Dickens. And then by taking those authors to schools and letting kids meet them, you know, it just got better and better and better in terms of coordinating and cooperating with many of our community partners, and the educational outreach is part of it. So nice. It's something that's very important.
Wonderful. And you mentioned that we have several contemporaries. Not only will we have Paul wandering as Mr. Dickens, but we also have, you mentioned, Mark Twain and H.G. Wells, the Bronte sisters. So let's talk about this growth that you referred to over the years, not just in the festival itself, but how about the audience? Let's look at that for a second. Folks that came to the festival in 1993, how much has this grown itself?
I would have to say that I think our festival initially appealed to an older audience, although it's very family-friendly. Mm-hmm. Now, with the introduction of steampunk, we really saw steampunk come into greater importance maybe 5 or 6 years ago. And one of our fashion shows, the Sunday fashion show, features steampunk, but that encourages an awful lot of young people to get involved. And many of our author characters are young people themselves. They are people that come from as far away as L.A. to come to the festival to dress up and act out the parts of these authors. And last year they created an author's picnic just on their own. And this year, the bookshop is going to try and feature many of the books by these authors and then encourage some of our customers to run over to their author's picnic and then speak to the author and maybe have the author autograph their book.
Oh, how cool.
So, you know, just clever ways to try and tie in each component of the festival and kind of interweave so that guests are engaged.
Nice.
With all the people that are involved at the festival.
And you can't help but feel that someone who may not normally be into reading may be compelled to read if they have something autographed by Mr. Twain himself
or to talk to somebody who can. I mean, our Mr. Poe and our Mr. Well, many of our characters, our Mr. Dickens, are so much that person that kids get a big kick out of interacting with that person and asking them about their personal life and why did you write this and what were you thinking, you know, what was going on for you personally. And that just makes it so much more engaging, I think.
Of course. Again, a person can simply go to dickensfest.com for not only a schedule, but also good directions for no matter what direction you may be coming from. But for those familiar with the area, this is pretty much the pedestrian mall for this festival?
Yes, between University and 11th Street, because we have some events happening in the courthouse. Trial of Jack the Ripper and our fashion show for certain are at the courthouse. And many, many, many vendors. I looked on the website, and I think we have 25 different vendors. I mean, I'm sure we have more than that, but at least 25 vendors that offer very unique items, steampunk clothing, mercantile, that would be dry goods, that would have been like patterns to make your own day wear or gown. There's jewelers that will be there that have created jewelry that would be very unique to that time period. There are some amazing food vendors. So it's stretched out through the whole three blocks.
Yes.
The bookstore is there. There's Oliver's Alley, which is an area for kids to learn how to play games that would have been things that the children in that time period would have done.
Oh, cool.
I mean, there's so much going on. We do have schedules posted on the website now so that you can see, for example, Trial of Jack the Ripper happens both days at 10:30 and both days at 4 o'clock. So there are four opportunities to see that play. The fashion show happens on Saturday and Sunday, one time each. Saturday is more Victorian, and it's family fortunes, so how these women designed their own gowns, but how they made their money.
Mm.
And the steampunk Sunday is just great fun, because the people who make steampunk outfits, it's just so unique and clever. I mean, it's pretty amazing how many things you can see when you're there, and then be able to go up to people and say, oh my goodness, where did you get that? And then find out that, you know, a high percentage of people have made what they're wearing.
Oh, yes, yes. Folks that are into the steampunk thing, or even, let's just say, any kind of cosplay, it's not very often that a person is into it just a little bit. They will often go full head-on into it. Back to maybe Dickens, possibly even Great Expectations itself. Wasn't there an essay contest for middle and high schoolers this year?
Yes,
okay,
yes.
Talk about this. Is this going to be the winners unveiled this year, or what went on with this?
Yes, you can go on the website and find the exact time. I don't know that exactly, but there are staged events throughout the festival, and there's more than one stage. So it gets a little tricky, you know, if there's certain things you want to see. But yes, the students will be highlighted and recognized. Both Mr. Dickens and I believe the Queen are involved in presenting certificates to the students that did the best job.
Oh, my goodness.
But again, a neat way to involve not only students, but, you know, families in our event.
Well, now this is, again, going to be going on over the 24th and 25th of February. There's a lot of events, and again, a person can simply go to dickensfestival.com. We're speaking with Linda Dilday, and there are several new events going on this year.
Quite a few new things. You know, I would have to say that this group of people that puts this festival on are the most creative and dedicated people. So we've got Escape from Miss Havisham's Attic. We've got Dialogue with the Dead, Break on Through to the Other Side, and it's a medium extraordinaire leads audience members to watch and participate in a humorous seance. We have Brassworks returning, and Brassworks is our very renowned Dan Bernstein's group of musicians that will be performing.
Okay. Wonderful.
And they are performing in the courthouse. So any event that happens in the courthouse is a paid event, and no tickets are more than $10. In the past, we've had a lot of performers that perform throughout the weekend, and we really wanted to do something that people could only see Friday night for our main fundraiser kickoff. And this year, it is Mr. Pickwick's Predicament, and it's a murder mystery. You know, try and figure out what's going on. Things will happen throughout the evening that will entertain all. And then Mr. Pickwick is certainly our host. We also celebrate Mr. Dickens' birthday, which is in February.
Oh,
and
nice.
So we'll have cake and celebrations. What I mentioned with Miss Havisham's Attic and the seance, those are happening at the First Congregational Church. They have always participated with us with the Victorian Tea Room. So this adds a few more activities there at the church. And that's actually opposite the library on 7th Street, Michigan Avenue. So again, if it is a ticketed event and you would have to coordinate, you know, where you were going to be and how quickly you could get there for all the different performances.
Okay. Again, a schedule can be found at dickensfest.com. And this Mr. Pickwick's Predicament, this is this interactive murder mystery. This is at Pickwick's Pub. This is one of the regular things that's set up on the pedestrian mall, or have you actually taken one of the local pubs?
We do this event now at the First Christian Church on the corner of Harupa and Brockton.
Okay.
And I would love to mention that Chef Laurent Bayon from Just Pastries down street, downtown on 9th Street, and the Packing House Brewery, who will be featuring the Riley's Irish Red Ale and Black Beauty. They're very, very, it's a Black Beauty Cream Stout. both the restaurant and the Packing House Brewery will be, I believe Packing House is donating the beer for us this year, and Just Pastries is catering our event. So that is at the First Christian Church, and that is Friday night at 6 p.m., and like I said, we try so hard to feature things that they will not have an opportunity to see at the festival, because many things at the festival are free. And then having gone to Mr. Pickwick's predicament this year, that frees them up Saturday and Sunday to see other things.
Nice. That's a great aspect of it. So we've discussed a few of the new things coming up. How about a few of the things that have proven to be favorites over the last 24 years, and they just have to be back for this 25th year?
Well, and that would be the fashion show. I mean, the fashion show is so incredibly popular. When we first did it, we didn't have enough room for everybody to get in to the fashion show. I mean, it just depends. I mean, that's our biggest dilemma, is finding venues and places where lots of different things can be going on simultaneously. So the Victorian Tea Room at the Congregational Church, they have partnered with us years ago and created a sit-down tea in the church featuring scones and lemon curd and tea. And there were even times in years past when the Queen would join you for tea. I'm not certain of her schedule this year. Yeah. The Trial of Jack the Ripper, this will be the fifth year, but it has been extremely popular for the last 5 years. Oliver's Alley, the interactive area where kids can play games and dress up, that's been going on for years and years, and that's very popular. The Tavern is relatively new. I want to say we introduced the Tavern about the same time the Trial of Jack the Ripper, and that's quite popular. There was a time when there were renovations going on downtown, and we had our event at the convention center. And I know we tried a tavern concept there, but it works out much better for us on the pedestrian mall because we have lots more room. You know, the convention center, before it was remodeled, the spacing wasn't set up so that we could have our festival and all of these things going on at the same time. We used to do it downtown, you know, right on the street, and we blocked off between, I want to say, Lime and Orange Street. So that gave us two blocks, and then we kind of did a cross-section on probably Lemon that runs perpendicular to Mission Inn Avenue. We used that area, but as the pedestrian mall has allowed us to really expand, and that's been nice because it offers us places like the courthouse and then lots of places along the pedestrian mall where it doesn't require as much closing of streets, which, you know, you're not disrupting traffic and you're also not seeing a lot of traffic or vehicles here. You know, you're not dealing with that noise.
We just heard from Linda Dilday on the board with the Riverside Dickens Festival, now in its 25th year. That's coming up February 24th and 25th in downtown Riverside. More at dickensfest.com. Just ahead on KVCR, we have Rick Dulock in conversation with Dana Zimbrick, Artistic Director and Conductor for the California Chamber Orchestra. This is 91.9 KVCR, also at kvcrnews.org. You're listening to KVC Arts on 91.9 KVCR. I'm David Fleming. Up in just a little over a minute, we have Rick Dulock in conversation with Dana Zimbrick, Artistic Director and Conductor for the California Chamber Orchestra. Their upcoming concert, Out of This World, is February 24th at the Old Town Temecula Community Theater, a concert celebrating space exploration and music taken into space to represent the sounds of the Earth. First, though, as we have many authors on the program, if you'd like to grab a bunch of books, the Friends of the San Bernardino Public Library are planning a used book sale Saturday, February 24th in the Friends Room. That's at the rear of the Norman F. Feldheim Central Library in San Bernardino. There's a members-only sale, 9 until noon, then it's open to the public noon until 4. There will be a follow-up bag sale Saturday, March 3rd, when you can buy a grocery bag for $2 and fill it up with books. More at sbpl.org.
You're listening to KVC Arts. I'm Rick Dulock. On February 24th, the California Chamber Orchestra will perform Out of This World, a concert that, from what I'm reading, will celebrate space exploration. So prepare to launch, because today we've invited Dana Zimbrick on the program. She is Artistic Director and Conductor of the California Chamber Orchestra. Dana Zimbrick, thanks for joining me on KVC Arts.
Thank you so much for inviting me. I'm happy to be here.
Before we get to the concert, I'd like to invite you to share a little bit about your background and your work, both here in the Inland Empire and closer to San Diego, where you make your home. First of all, you're a musician, a clarinet, yes?
That's right, yes, I'm a clarinetist. I guess if you could say when I first fell in love with classical music as a young person, clarinet was my first chance to experience that.
I like the clarinet because you can make the clarinet talk, basically, you know? It was growing up with cartoons and things, and that was the music in the background when a character was walking. And I didn't know that when I was a kid, but then, you know, as I get older, it's like, what a cool, versatile instrument.
Yeah, it really is, and you know, that's true. I mean, I mentioned my love of classical music, but certainly the clarinet is used in all different genres of music. And it is a very vocal-like instrument. I mean, it sounds, you know, very voice-like. Yeah, you can certainly get a lot of different moods and colors out of the instrument. So, yes, I've enjoyed performing it.
So first a musician and now leading orchestras and things. Let's talk about some of the other places where you work before we get to the California Chamber Orchestra. You conduct the Classics Philharmonic Orchestra. Is that in San Diego?
It is in San Diego, yeah. So the Classics Philharmonic is a professional orchestra in San Diego, and it is the resident orchestra of Classics for Kids. This is an organization that's been around for over 20 years, and we do interactive educational concerts and workshops and assemblies in schools, and it's all about music education, actually. I've been very fortunate to be with this organization for 15 years and had a great time trying to introduce new audiences to the wonders of classical music.
And so the group you work with, how big is that group?
We have had small chamber ensembles all the way to, you know, like a 30-piece orchestra, so it varies depending on the program. We do a variety of different themes and programs throughout the year.
Nice. And is there anything you can share about what you're working on right now there?
Sure. Yeah. In March next month for Classics for Kids, we have a program called Bach to Rock. And it's showing the parallels between Baroque music and modern pop and rock music today. One of the things I really try to do, especially with the kids, is start with something that I think they might know, and then build from there as a way to show them that classical music is not as foreign as it might seem.
You also work with the California Ballet Company in San Diego. Are you working on a ballet right now with them?
So no, for them, for the last couple of years, I have worked with them on their Nutcracker performances. California Ballet is, I believe, the largest professional ballet company, certainly in San Diego, possibly in the larger Southern California region. And they do a month-long performances of the Nutcracker Ballet at the Civic Theater downtown in San Diego. And so my colleague, John Stubbs, who's their music director, and then I'm one of their staff conductors, the two of us work and conduct the live orchestra for the Tchaikovsky score. So that's been a wonderful experience because I adore dance and so thrilled and amazed by the level of dance that they bring to the stage. And of course, the Tchaikovsky music is incredible, and we only know a few highlights of it that are played over and over at the holiday time, but there's so much music. It's a wonderful challenge, both for your brain and your heart, and it's just great music. So it's been a really great thing to get to do.
Very nice. And so you're recovering from that still, probably.
I probably recover about it finally in June, and then it's almost time to start thinking about it again. But, you know, I will say, you know, I think Nutcracker can get a bad rap, certainly. It's done a lot, and I think in certain circles, they're becoming a lack of respect for it because it's just repeated so much between all the ballet companies. But really, when you have a live orchestra in the pit and professional dancers on stage, the work relationship that happens between dancers and live music, the professionalism that's required all around to make those productions happen, it truly is an honor to be a part of it.
Well, let's get to the California Chamber Orchestra. You've been leading the orchestra since 2010?
Yeah, I have. I've been fortunate to be the artistic director and conductor since 2010. And my goal really has been to take these very high-level musicians and to try to work with the programming in a way. And, it's, you know, there's a parallel to the work that I do with Classics for Kids. I mean, California Chamber Orchestra is for adult audiences and extremely high-level musicians playing the orchestra. But I am, when I'm programming, I'm really trying to think about stories that can come out of the music or things that the music was used for, ways to make it relevant. I think in our audiences, we have a lot of people who are very staunch classical music lovers and supporters. We also have a lot of adults who come who don't know much about classical music, haven't maybe been to a lot of orchestra concerts. And I try to figure out, why is it important that we're still doing this music today? What is it about the stories behind the music, or, you know, what can I bring out that can really make it relevant to today's audiences?
Well, on February 24th, you will lead the California Chamber Orchestra in the concert you're calling Out of This World. Can you explain the name of this particular performance?
Yeah, so I'm really excited about this. One of my personal passions, aside from classical music, is I'm truly fascinated with space and space exploration. And, well, in 1977, NASA launched Voyager 1 and 2, and we just celebrated the 40th anniversary of these space probes supposed to go out into our solar system, but actually Voyager 1 has traveled beyond our solar system into interstellar space, so farther away than, you know, our own solar system. In fact, I was looking yesterday, and Voyager 1 is now something like 13 billion miles away from the sun. It's the farthest man-made thing that's ever been sent out. The cool thing about this is that the committee that put together these space probes, Voyager 1 and Voyager 2, included a golden record, and they put all kinds of things on this record. So sounds from Earth, images from Earth. Somehow they were able to figure out a way to digitize the images, even though this was back in the 1970s. But then they have music on there as well. And so the committee, and it was led by Carl Sagan, a wonderful, famous American astrophysicist, and he and the committee had to think about what music would we use to represent humanity. And the whole idea was that if this probe goes as far as it can go, what if someday it connects with intelligent life somewhere else? What would we want to tell them about life here on Earth? And so it's all these pieces selected. So the majority of the music that we're going to be performing with the California Chamber Orchestra on February 24th are music that comes from selections on this golden record. In a few cases, we have some pieces that are not actually from the golden record, but tie in different ways. I love it from the perspective of thinking about, why might these pieces have been chosen? What does it say about the committee? But what is it about these pieces that would make them so special? But the whole concert is called Out of This World, because truly I'm thinking of everything on the concert is examples of the best of what we've been able to make in classical music.
The Voyager had, like you said, depictions of the human body and all different kinds of things, as well as the music on the golden record. So that's really exciting. So your own fascination with space and spaceflight led to the idea. That's really great. My dad worked on the Apollo program, so I've lived in Houston and in Cocoa Beach at different times in my life while he was working on the Apollo missions. So the fascination with space and my awareness of it has been my whole life. So I was really intrigued when I saw what you were doing with this concert. So what specifically will you perform on the 24th?
We're going to be doing Bach's Brandenburg Concerto No. 2, and I'm really excited about this because, you know, there are six Brandenburg concertos, and number two is the one that calls for this incredibly difficult trumpet part. And it's hard to find people who are willing to play it.
Because it's really difficult, so it's super hard to play.
Yeah, it's so high, and it's one of the most difficult in the repertoire for trumpet. And I'm so excited because we have a wonderful, wonderful trumpet player named Calvin Price, who's going to be performing with us. He's a member of the San Diego Symphony, so he'll be performing that. And this is great. I love Bach, and there are actually a number of Bach selections that are on the Golden Record. One of them is a movement from the Brandenburg Concerto No. 2, so we're going to be doing that. We're going to be doing the very famous first movement of Beethoven's Symphony No. 5. That is also on the Golden Record. I wanted to do a full symphony, and I wanted to give our audiences a little bit of a broader idea of the work of Beethoven. So we're also going to do Beethoven's Symphony No. 7. For me, that piece, it was one of the pieces that I fell in love with first in classical music. And for me, it's musical sunshine is Beethoven's Symphony No. 7. And so certainly in my mind, it fits in the realm of music that is absolutely out of this world, because I love it so much. And then we have worked over the last a couple of years ago, we worked with an Orange County group called Trio Celeste, and they contacted me to offer the West Coast premiere of a Concerto Grosso that was written for them by Paul Dooley. And so we're also going to do the West Coast premiere of that Concerto Grosso on the February 24th concert. And Trio Celeste premiered the piece last April at Carnegie Hall. But wow. Now they're going to do their West Coast premiere with us on February 24th.
So the first time on the West Coast that they're performing it is with you.
That's right.
You're listening to KVC Arts. I'm Rick Dulock, and my guest is Dana Zimbrick, Artistic Director and Conductor of the California Chamber Orchestra. Among other things, we're talking about their upcoming concert, Out of This World. The concert is part of the Temecula Presents Classical Series and takes place on Saturday, February 24th at the Old Town Temecula Community Theater. Tickets are $35 for regular admission, $30 for seniors, and $10 for students. They're available at the Old Town Temecula Community Theater ticket office or at calchamberorchestra.org. That's calchamberorchestra.org. The orchestra will salute the flight of Voyager 1 by performing two pieces of music found on a golden record which accompanies other earthly artifacts on the ship as it travels around the universe. Well, it sounds like it's going to be a really fun concert to see. Is there anything else you want to add about the concert before we move on?
I'm also working on creating some visuals that will go with the concert as well, so I hope to be able to shed some light on why I think space is so cool and use some visuals during the concert as well.
That's not the only thing on the calendar for the California Chamber Orchestra. Can you tell us about some of the other things? You have some recitals that go on kind of on a regular basis. Can you tell us about those?
We have a series called Classics at the Merck, which happens on Sunday afternoon, roughly every other Sunday afternoon at 3 o'clock. Our orchestra performs in the main theater of the Old Town Temecula Community Theater. And then right next to that is a smaller space called the Merck. And it used to be an old mercantile building. It's really beautiful. Brick walls on the inside. And we have little cafe tables and chairs that people can sit at. You can enjoy a glass of wine while you listen. And it's a Sunday afternoon chamber music series. And so we invite great chamber musicians from all over Southern California to come and be a part of that series as well. And so we got a lot of different people who are just looking for something to do in downtown Temecula on a Sunday afternoon who stop in. Sometimes it's specific to what the performance is. I mean, we've had everything from a saxophone quartet to a solo piano to string trios, string quartets. I mean, all kinds of woodwind quintets, all kinds of combinations of instruments. And it's really, I think it only seats 42 people. So it's a really up close and personal chance to, number one, hear beautiful chamber music, but then also to get to do a little bit of a talk back with the musicians after the performance, to hear them introduce the pieces and understand why they chose them and what's on their recital. You know, we're trying to really make music personal in that series, and we've had a lot of success with it.
The Merck, isn't there usually like a featured artist or two that have their work, like visual artists?
In the lobby of the Merck is a small art gallery, and it is on a rotational basis. I believe it's run by the city of Temecula, but yeah, so there's an art connection there as well.
Very nice. You're also into music education. I mean, you've mentioned that, working with Temecula and Murrieta schools. Can you tell us about what you do with them?
Sure. Well, this last year we were really excited. We were awarded a grant with the California Arts Council to bring a performance of Peter and the Wolf to all the fourth graders in the Murrieta School District. So that's one thing that we've done very recently. But also for the last number of years, we've had a number of in-school assemblies that have featured our quartet in residence, the Quartet Nouveau. And also sometimes I'm available to go in and do coaching as bands or orchestras are getting ready for festival time. And we also have been able to offer free or very inexpensive tickets to all of our performances for students. As an organization, the California Chamber Orchestra is very dedicated to making sure that kids have access to music, whether it's us coming to them in their school or hopefully getting them to come and see us in the theater or on our Sunday afternoon series as well.
In April, you have something else. You have a recital with a very special guest on violin.
We do. So this has been a really big year for the orchestra. As I mentioned, we already got a California Arts Council grant. We also received a Women's Philharmonic grant to cover some of the music we've done by women composers, because that's another thing we've been trying to do to bring diversity to our programming. We also received what's called a Partners in Performance grant from the very, very famous violinist, Midori. And as part of that, we are able to bring Midori to Murrieta. We're going to be the Murrieta Mesa High School Gershwin Music Center on April 21st. And we're going to get to present Midori in recital.
That's very, very exciting, I'm sure.
It's one of those things. I mean, we all are in our areas doing what we do. We're trying to do really excellent work. And a lot of these artists, like Midori, I mean, they're just out of reach for smaller organizations because they're so well known. And it's frankly just ridiculously expensive and difficult, number one, to get on their calendar, but also to have the budget to present someone at this level. So, you know, we applied for the grant for her Partners in Performance. It's a program that she has, and we were granted it and just incredibly thrilled to be able to present such a famous musician and really to do it in the neighborhood, you know, where people can come and hear her and learn about her journey and hopefully be very inspired. And hopefully it's going to inspire all of us to keep doing what we're doing.
On Saturday, February 24th, the California Chamber Orchestra explores Out of This World. They will be led through this concert, dedicated to spaceflight and Voyager 1, by their esteemed artistic director and conductor, and my guest today on KVC Arts, Dana Zimbrick. They will perform at the Old Town Temecula Community Theater. Tickets range from $10 to $35. That's a regular admission down to students, seniors, or $30. They're available at the Old Town Temecula Community Theater ticket office or at calchamberorchestra.org. That's calchamberorchestra.org. Dana, can you tell me one thing that people wouldn't know about you before we close?
Oh, my goodness. One thing that people wouldn't know about me? Okay, here's one thing. I love craft beer. I love IPAs. How about that? I don't usually talk about that, but you know, in addition to being a space nerd and a classical music fan, I love IPAs.
Excellent. Dana, thank you so much for joining me today on KVC Arts.
Thanks for having me. It's been a lot of fun.
You're listening to KVC Arts on 91.9 KVCR. I'm Rick Dulock. Thanks for listening.
And thank you, Rick, in conversation with Dana Zimbrick, Artistic Director and Conductor for the California Chamber Orchestra. Again, the upcoming concert, Out of This World, is February 24th at the Old Town Temecula Community Theater. More at calchamberorchestra.org. And that's just about going to wrap up another edition of KVC Arts. Thanks again to Dana Zimbrick, to comedian Kevin Avery, and Linda Dilday with the Riverside Dickens Festival. Here at KVCR, thanks to Lillian Vasquez, Rick Dulock, Benjamin Perper, Emmanuel Rogers, and Jessica Greenwell. Music beds and themes heard on KVC Arts, Behind Us Now, for example, composed and performed by Sean Longstreet. So thanks to Sean as well. You can hear past KVC Arts programs via podcast at kvcrnews.org/arts. And David Fleming, thanks especially to you for listening and for your support.